Well, you've tuned into 96.7 on your FM dial. This is CKLU, well, here in Sudbury, and you can rotate the Radio Garden Globe. Go to the app and find Canada, find Ontario, find Sudbury, find CKLU 96.7. Of course, you can listen asynchronously to this as well. You don't have to listen Thursdays at 6 o'clock. You can listen to podcasts anytime. Just Google my name, Hugh Kruzel. That's K-R-U-Z-E-L. And the word, well, it's not really a word. It's Q-O-L. It represents quality of life. That's what this program is all about. My guest today, well, from, he's going to tell you where he is and what's going on and why we're talking. Alex Bowers, where are you today?
So I'm about 10 minutes outside of Antigonish, Nova Scotia. And to say the least, we are stuck in an absolutely extraordinary snowstorm, or at least the aftermath of.
Is it still snowing?
It's not snowing as we speak. We are gratefully having a minor break from it, but I've been warned that there might be some more snow due later. I think it's fair to say we've had the worst of it now. We're just trying to
Did you put a measuring tape out? Did you put a yardstick out?
Do you know what? We should do that. We should totally do that. No, I'd be curious to know, though.
I would be.
I might do that later. That's a great idea.
But go find an area where it's like drifted a little bit more and get the real maximum and send that back to England. Because you're from England. Send it back to them and you know, like, this is the wilds of Canada.
It's honestly unlike anything I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, we're nearing a year since we moved out here to Nova Scotia from the UK. And back in Blighty, we don't have to worry about snowstorms like of this proportion. You know, if we get so much as a sprinkling of snow on the ground, as a general rule of thumb, society in the UK comes to a grinding halt. So I'm kind of impressed to be in Nova Scotia and see that even some Canadians are finding this a bit much this time.
Yeah, wait.
So I don't think I'm alone.
Have you heard the term Snowmageddon?
Snowmageddon, yeah, that's right. Absolutely. I'm certainly feeling that's what we're amid at the moment.
Well, seriously, I mean, a general sense, how much is there? And how quickly did it fall?
Well, it's... I'm no good when it comes to measurements, to be quite frank. I need to get that measuring stick out and work out for myself. But all I can tell you, I can gauge it on how much snow I've had drifting up to about halfway up our door easily, which has just been mind-blowing. It has been truly mind-blowing. And it took so much effort to try and dig ourselves out.
Were the doors being forced closed? Were you able to open the door to get out?
Thankfully, that it wasn't so bad in that regard. Yeah, we managed to get out. Annie sort of did a bit of digging, like ploughing, rather earlier. Although we did learn a very valuable lesson very, very quickly, and that is to have your shovel near the door. Alas, I left it down the bottom of the stairs from our house.
No!
And I had to trudge out and get it. And again, I think it's just one of those life lessons that I was probably overdue sooner rather than later.
And you've broken a shovel this... Well, last year. You broke a shovel.
Right. Yeah, we're learning. It's all these curveballs getting thrown at us. And so far, we've managed. But our shovel has seen better days.
Did you put that one back together, or did you get a new...
We managed to put that one back together, and that's the one that I left at the bottom of the stairs today. So it's getting battered about a bit, to say the least.
Do you only have one shovel?
Yeah, again, another rookie mistake that we've learned.
So
I think after today, we need to invest in another.
The shovels, I mean, there's many different kinds. There's the pushy kind that you use to move small amounts to the side. Then there's the more cutty ones that you use to cut blocks to then throw. And you know, I mean, not like garden shovels. They're different, and you want them to be light, as light as possible. So aluminum or plastic. Alex, do you know about ergonomic shovels?
No, that's... do enlighten me. I mean,
they're
that sounds...
kind of like have twists in them. And
okay.
And you can actually, the handle itself can be In fact, there are many. You need to go to your local home hardware or Home Depot,
honestly,
or just a general hardware store and get edumacated.
I think well, that's the one thing. Again, is it's sort of blown my mind how many different types of shovels there are, and being an ignorant Englishman, sort of trying to get his head around Canadian winters, I thought to myself, a shovel's a shovel. You learn fast.
I'm going to add one more to your pantheon of tools, the snow float.
The snow float, okay.
Have you heard of this?
It rings a bell, but do tell me.
It's kind of a U-shaped handle, metal, and the front is quite large. The idea is that you pick up some snow and you float it. You just change the angle slightly and float it over to somewhere where you want to deposit it, and then raise it up and it slides off magically.
Oh boy, that sounds like something we could do with right now.
Yeah, the idea is it moves vast quantities of snow. Have we described the snow yet? Is it light and fluffy? Is it heavy and wet? Is it crusty on top? Is it very fine powder? Is it big
It's pretty fluffy. Whenever we go out there, we feel like we're getting consumed by it. You put one foot in, you're not sure you're going to get it back again. It's not very compressed. It's been a challenge, but it's been a fun challenge. It's been an experience unto itself. I mean, we were always told that us Brits would have to get used to a Canadian winter sooner rather than later, and I feel like this has been very much our baptism of snow.
Has Antigonish experienced snow of this quantity before, or is this a 100-year record breaker?
I think I get the sense from speaking to a few of my Canadian friends that they have not seen this amount of snow since they were kids. So I think this is definitely once in a generation, like sort of a situation. Obviously, I'm not that well informed to know for sure, but I'm getting the sense that definitely people around town
You're a historian. Alex is a historian. He writes about history and shares it with us through a variety of magazines, including recently you had a story in the Legion magazine.
I did have a story in the Legion, yeah. So I specialize in Canadian military history. I wrote about all the Canadian officers that were in the British Army during the Second World War.
Now, let's go there. I mean, it's not necessarily Canadian history, but I'm sure there's many examples. I have a feeling there's an article waiting to come out on the effect of winter on the Canadian military, perhaps even in training in the early days of the First World War, or preparing people in the Second. I mean, you know, there's training grounds out in Manitoba and Shiloh. I'm sure winter there is pretty brutal. But
I can only imagine.
But you've delved deeply. I mean, poor Napoleon. Napoleon went to
I tell you what, if you can learn one lesson, and that's do not invade Russia in the winter.
Do not invade Antigonish in the winter.
Absolutely not. it's been a pleasure to tell a lot of Canadian military history stories as well. I've even managed to tell one local story recently from Antigonish about a serviceman who's sadly was killed in action in the Korean War, but whose story ended up inspiring Canada's National Korean War Memorial in Brampton, Ontario. And again, I just could not believe it, but I did some digging, and of 516 Canadians that had been killed in action during Korean War, it just so happened that this poor gentleman came from my adopted hometown. So it was an honor to tell his story, and it's been amazing to tell those local stories.
Are there relatives still in Antigonish?
Absolutely. I got to go and speak to his sister, which was one of the most moving experiences of my life, honestly. It was... So basically, the story is that the memorial was inspired by one of the sisters. So this gentleman had many sisters, but one of the sisters wanted someone to pay tribute to her lost brother. And she worked with a local Korean War Association branch, whose president just so happened to be on the same patrol.
One of his mates.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And so they had that tie, and that story, those two individuals, that sister and this former Conrad, brought together this the idea of creating Canada's National Korean War Memorial. I mean, they when the government didn't offer any funding to it, it was ended up being the responsibility of legions across the country, of Korean War associations, veterans, Korean Canadians. They were the ones that raised the funds for this memorial. But it all comes back to my town, and I couldn't believe the chances of that. And within a few days of discovering that it was someone from Anaganish, I got to go and meet one of the sisters, the sole surviving sister. So it was, yeah, absolute honor of my life.
Wow. Where in Brampton would it be? I mean, should we make a pilgrimage to it?
I think it's very important that people make a pilgrimage. You know, it's perhaps a cliche now, but the Korean War is so often called the Forgotten War. And I think it's for good reason, too. And I think that's especially the case in Canada, where, I just don't think it's sort of penetrated the Canadian consciousness as much as the First and the Second World War. You know, you think of the First World War, you think of Vimy Ridge, you think of Passchendaele, you go to the Second World War, you know, thoughts come of Juno Beach, of maybe the Scheldt, or the Battle of the Atlantic. But the Korean War, it just hasn't quite resonated with the public in the same way. And I think it's important to make the distinction that it's, you know, the Second World War mobilized an entire world. It mobilized Canada for sure. So it should be treated as a smaller conflict, the Korean War. But that doesn't mean that those that served in it should be forgotten.
It wasn't unimportant.
It's been, honestly, a privilege for me to help highlight at least one.
No kidding. You're right. You know, it'd be hard for most of us, I think, to name a battle, to name a significant turning point in the Korean conflict. Although we all know about the DMZ and we know about North and South Korea and the craziness of the North even today. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we. But I think
there were important battles. I mean, there was the Battle of Kapyong, which was in April 1951, that the Canadians held off against repeated Chinese attacks during the Chinese offensive that spring. But again, it's not that name that sort of sits up there with Juno Beach or Vimy Ridge. It just hasn't quite captured the same imagination. And I think it's important that we talk about them.
So why Brampton and why not Ottawa, where we get, you know, the monument to the United Nations soldiers, the Blue Cappers, when we've got so many, you know, a Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. We've got, you know, massive, even in small towns around Ottawa's a zone, the Green Belt. You get, you know, small towns that have a cenotaph. You know, is there a plaque?
It feels like there should be something in Ottawa. It feels like, I can't speak to that too much. I think my understanding of the situation was Brampton was chosen perhaps because of the proximity of the Korean War Association that was helping to fund it.
They got to choose.
But again, I think having something in Ottawa would be absolutely critical. Now more than ever, because bearing in mind a lot of the Korean War veterans, they themselves had been veterans of the Second
World War.
And that means that we are about a minute to midnight with that generation. Mm. It's a sad truth, but we're about to lose that tangible connection we have to the Second World War over the coming years. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. And by extension, then, that also means the Korean War.
Right.
What years? So many of these former veterans.
What years Korean War? I mean, even at that, I'm struggling.
1950 to 1953 was the extent of the Korean War. Oh. Although technically, it's not ended.
No, it was not an armistice or anything like that. It wasn't a.
It was a ceasefire that's been going on for the last 70 years.
And craziness ensues. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's broadly speaking. That's broadly speaking. I think we both know what North Korea are capable of.
Right. Yeah, and more and more every day. So,
absolutely.
Alex Bowers, you're now snowbound.
Yes.
Your vehicle is probably in the driveway. So I know you got stuck the other day.
Yeah, it's been
Oh, you went off the road even before that.
Cars, to say the least.
Yes. Yes. Didn't you go off the road like 2 or 3 weeks before that?
Yeah. So the first incident, I had been dropping Annie off at work. She works in town. And I'd been coming home and I completely skidded off the road. I spun onto the other side of the road as a car was passing. Thankfully, I missed it. And things were happening in slow motion. Like, you're thinking to yourself, once you pass the car and you can see there's a ditch coming, you're like, okay, this isn't going to be nice, but I think I'm going to survive this at this point. Once you pass the car, you know, okay, whatever happens from here, I'm probably going to be okay. And that was all playing through my mind over the course of a matter of seconds. And then I hit the bank, and thankfully, I couldn't believe this, but two cars drove past. The first one pulled over to check if I was okay. The second one was where my cousins. And it just goes to show what kind of a small community that I'm living in. So I just thought, what are the chances of that? And thankfully, they were able to help get me out.
And what were the first words out of their mouth?
Oh, I think they were probably just checking out that I was okay. You know,
Alex, what are you doing in there?
Hopeless little English cousin in the bank. They probably would, that was the first priority, to make sure he's okay.
Was there a bit of a guffaw after that?
I've not seen them since then, but I'm sure I'm going to make it into one of their anecdotes, no doubt.
And then down the bottom of your drive, you got stuck in the snow as well.
That's right, too. So Annie, so a couple of weeks later... Annie got herself, unfortunately, stuck trying to come up our driveway, and there was just no way she was going to be getting out. I was working at home that day, so I'd been writing at home. So I sort of, we came to meet each other halfway. She walked up the driveway. Bearing in mind, our driveway is the best part of a mile or so long down a dirt track, and she got stuck right at the beginning, and we had to walk down in these blizzard conditions to try and find each other and then try and work out what best to do. And thankfully we've got amazing friends,
another cousin,
who they came to come and help us. And yeah, it just goes to show that we live in a wonderful community with people that are, you know, willing to look out for us.
Well, you went where I was going to go with this. I was asking about the snow and the incidents, and you went to the working at home thing. As a historian, you are often writing you're working in solitude in many ways. Although, as you said, you do interviews, you visited with people, you go to archives, many of which are now online, of course. But solitude. So now you're snowbound. You and Annie are snowbound today. Is this going to spur more writing, or is this, you know, gnashing of teeth, pulling of hair, when is this going to end? Or are you looking at this and going, isolation,
that's
more?
That's a good question. I think being a writer who so often works from home, I've kind of got used to that sense of isolation. I feel like I'm fairly well equipped. I mean, Annie's a little more outgoing than me, and Annie, you know, has a day job that she has to go. So this is kind of a bit more of a new experience for her. But I have yet to give myself the time to sit down and do some proper writing, but from the looks of things, I've got plenty of time.
Yes.
So I think it's suffice it to say, I think we're going to be in here for a few more days before we get ploughed out.
And
who knows, maybe I'll write my next masterpiece.
My first
masterpiece.
Well, I just have a feeling that this might spur you on to investigate the impact of winter on military training,
That's
Canadian,
a great one.
Like I'm thinking even Korea. Korea,
yeah,
does get snow in,
I mean,
winter.
Absolutely. The weather in Korea was certainly a challenge, absolutely. Again, with the winter conditions there, and then summer being, you know, you go from one extreme to the other.
It's very much so, yes.
Yeah, that could be an interesting study.
Let's face it, I don't know if you've been there yet, and I haven't actually been there myself in years. Have you heard of DCIEM, the Defense and Civil Institute of Environmental Medicine?
No, I can't say I have.
Put that on your radar, because they do things like, is this uniform going to work in cold and wet conditions? Are these socks going to keep feet warm? Is this jacket going to fit people of different body types? DCIEM, look them up. In the Korean War, were our Canadian soldiers kitted properly?
I do believe they were, sort of, as you headed into later years. Again, I'm not. This is the thing. I think you bring up a really good point here, and there's the fact of the matter is, my writing and my historian credentials, I'm very much learning as I go, and that's kind of the exciting thing about what I do. You know, it's been an honor to tell these Canadian military history stories, but you know, I'm not like necessarily an oracle with this. So it's been so fascinating for me to dig and to discover these things as I go along, right?
Well, that's your enthusiasm. And that's what we...
That's my enthusiasm, I guess.
That's what we read in your words. So, yeah. But, you know, I do think there's going to be an opportunity for you to even talk about... I mean, I have been, I will tell you, to Remembrance Day ceremonies where it is too cold for people, especially veterans who are in wheelchairs, to be outside. Some communities have embraced the idea of, well, let's use our community arena. We'll set up a cenotaph, or we'll do part of the ceremony outside and bring it inside across the road into our warmer space. Because it really is, yes.
Yeah. I think it's one of these interesting things, because I think Canadian... consciousness of wartime contributions, they're very much defined by all these iconic memorials. You know, you think of Vimy Ridge, you think of that iconic memorial there. That really has a huge influence on Canada's collective memory of the First World War. And these places dotted around the country obviously have that same impact. But I guess there's just going to be instances where you can't gather around a cenotaph because it's too cold. And with the veterans getting older, I think it would be suitable perhaps to re-examine that and maybe have more considerations for climatic factors, frankly. But I think that what I'm trying to say is, although these memorials have had such a huge impact on our understanding of the war, you know, you can have that same remembrance and paying tribute to the fallen and those who survived wherever, as long as you've got that in your heart and you can, just offer those thoughts on Remembrance Day and any day, frankly, then that's the most important part.
You know, I'm sure I've read at least one book on the effects of climate, well, weather, during the First World War. You know, it wasn't just the rain softening the ground. It was the thousands of feet that stomped across it, and the early tracked vehicles and horses, the sea of mud. But, you know, that's fall, spring, potentially summer. I mean, there were, in the 4 years of the First World War, there were four winters.
Yeah, yeah. And then you think of the second, too, when you've got, you know, all the, again, well, five winters, I guess. But yes. Nonetheless, I mean, you think of, again, the Canadians in Italy during the Second World War, and the mud, the quagmire, and the cold leading up on the long road to Altona.
Mm-hmm.
It's history repeating itself, sadly. And again, I think absolutely the weather, the temperature, these all have an impact on morale and transport and getting logistical supplies to armies on the front. These things have a huge impact, not just on the bare bones, looking at it from an operational point of view from the armies, but the individual too, that's huddled together, you know, in a slit trench, cold and ill-equipped. Absolutely.
Even if you are well-equipped, wasn't it Stalin who said, oh, the Germans can come and they can fight? But my Russian is not good enough to do a translation of this, but we have one more tool in our chest, our war chest, and it's called winter, and Stalingrad will... Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah, that rings a bell, Hugh, absolutely.
And the Battle of the Bulge. The Battle of the Bulge was also hampered by snow and winter conditions. Favorably, unfavorably.
It was horrendous.
Yes.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrendous. I mean, Canadians obviously didn't have much of a role in that.
No.
They were sort of positioned away from the Battle of the Bulge. But nonetheless, absolutely, those were absolutely horrendous conditions for the Americans and, to be frank, the Germans too, to have to experience.
Well, let's go to your home country. Think of all the Canadians who went over to do training in all the communities preparations for D-Day. I realize that was a different time of year, but I mean the masses of Canadians who ended up in camps and field training in England. Mm. I mean, still today, I find England sometime a little chilly.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
I would say Canadian soldiers probably went over and went, gosh, knit me some long underwear.
Absolutely. And again, they have that strong connection because they're in the UK for quite a long time. You know, the Canadians were actually twiddling their fingers somewhat.
Waiting.
When they weren't, I mean, they were obviously protecting the country against the potential of an invasion at that point. But nonetheless, I think they were chomping at the bit to get into the action. And unfortunately, that manifested itself in events like Dieppe.
Yes. But I think the Brits probably thought they were invaded already by the Americans and the Canadians.
Yes.
So.
Well, it was a friendly invasion. That's what they say about the Americans. It certainly applies to the Canadians too.
Absolutely.
There's some wonderful, wonderful stories I've heard of the rapport between Canadians and the Brits at that time. There's one of my favorite stories was, and I hope this isn't too crude. Forgive me if it is. But a British woman sent a complaint to a commanding officer about a certain private who had come round, and not only she, but her daughter was pregnant thanks to this private. But that wasn't the problem. The complaint wasn't about the fact she said, oh, I don't blame the poor kid, you know, we had our role in that too. But he did borrow my daughter's bicycle, and I would like it back.
How are you going to write about war brides at all?
I'd love to. Again, one of the things that I've had the honour to do since coming over here was tell these British connections to Canadian stories. So recently I wrote about British evacuees that came over to Canada during the Second World War, and, you know, made Canada their distant sanctuary. And again, after the Second World War, you had masses of war brides that are coming over here with wonderful, happy endings for most, or so many of them at least.
Well, you brought your bride to Canada, and you've invaded Canada, Alex.
I have. I've got my own friendly invasion going on the other way.
You are stuck. You are housebound through Snowmageddon in Anaganish and up to Sydney, Nova Scotia. There's people buried today. Alex Bowers, thank you so much for chatting with us. I hope that you go to the store and maybe you can buy Annie. Is there a birthday coming up or something?
Not for a while, but I don't need a
reason. Can buy her a shovel as a gift, I think so.
Maybe, yeah, I'll put a little bow on it.
His and hers, definitely. A matching pair of shovels.
I like it. I think it's a good idea for more than one reason.
Well, thank you for taking some time to join us today here on CKLU 96.7. My guest today, Alex Bowers, snowbound in Anaganish. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Hugh.
Bye for now, folks.